Today, I'd like to introduce my message by reading to you a recent pastor's update that my dad gave. Many of you know my dad. He's in Australia. Most people, every once in a while, get compliments on messages and articles. And unfortunately, that's actually my dad. If you happen to recognize the name, people are like, oh, I think I know that name. It's usually my dad in most cases. And he gets out, and he's in Australia, and he does a pastor's update every week. And I'd like to read this to you, kind of introduce my subject today. And it's a little bit towards the young people, but it's really for everybody here. And we'll, let me just read it. And this is what he said. This is something that he wrote about probably about 5 weeks ago now to his congregation in Brisbane. And they had just done the week before a young adults seminar for the week. And they had a special, you know, I think a camp out and service for that. So this is what he wrote in regards to this congregation after that. So this is his update. He says, I figured out this week, and also to let you know the backdrop, he also got shingles that week, the week after that. So he was sort of out, and he didn't know what was going on. I think they rushed him to my mom had him rushed to the hospital, and it turned out it was only shingles, although that's still can be serious, more painful than serious, but so he had that going on as well. So that's kind of the backdrop of this announcement. Says, I figured out this week, see prayer announcement, because there's a prayer announcement about him. And this thought had been emerging for some time now, that our lives are two-tiered. As you get older, physically your body betrays you. But at the same time, you have acquired a lot of wisdom. In other words, as you grow older, you have learned a lot through experience. Some say experience is the best teacher. Others have said that experience is the only teacher. Alas, but the body isn't up to doing all the things you want to do. The consolation is that at least you know more because you've learned more. So this is the two-tiered life. Therefore, and he quotes a scripture from 2 Corinthians, he says, therefore we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. God in his wisdom knows that we learn sometimes through suffering that our bodies and all the power, energy, pride, vanity will wane, and all the things you thought you knew comes crashing home. Yep, a two-tiered life. Do we ever get it right? And he says, I told the young people last weekend that they have an opportunity to learn from others, especially about how to live so they can have the best life possible. He says, they have a two-tiered life also, except theirs is the other way around. Their physical life is filled with energy, right? Confidence, and they think that they are bulletproof and that they can do anything, and even sin may not affect them or won't affect them. Lack of wisdom is one tier. Endless physical strength and energy is the other. The chance to have a one-tier life, or the best of both, youth and energy, and then also wisdom to go with it, is the optimum. You know, David was a young man who, according to Michelangelo, and this is my dad's humor here, I think, had a great body and was really handsome. And he's referencing the statue in Italy. Maybe some of you have seen it. He learned to believe in God as a teenager and would actively seek to obey God when others around him were indifferent to this most vital search. David, at the age of 20, was over the men of war, a lot of them twice his age, and it says that he behaved himself wisely. Alas, he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. And that's found in 1 Samuel 18:5. So he goes on, in case you think I'm just commiserating with old people, this is really for the young. You can have both, but you have to start young. If you don't seek God when you're young and wind up doing some stupid things, you stand a good chance of ruining your life. What might your life be? You ask, you know, if you didn't do these stupid things. You would never know because you would never reach it. David went on to become the king of Israel and will have a position in the kingdom of God. all because he began to seek God when he was young. The optimum is that you have all the wonderful things youth offers and the wisdom to go with it. This is the best way, the one tier of life, youth and wisdom. Wisdom being the ability to know the right from the wrong and choosing the right. You know, thinking deeply about these things, seeking God and His wisdom, doesn't mean that you're going to be missing out on anything. The best is always yet to come, he ends up saying in his pastor's update. So my dad's pastor's update is a message to young folks, young people in the church, that they can really avoid learning things the hard way through experience and having the blessing of energy of youth and wisdom at the same time. There are keys to gaining wisdom at an early age to avoid having to learn tough lessons through experience and often has a negative consequence. This lesson, again, is geared to the young, but the message is really for every age. It's really for everybody here. And today I would like to speak about the wisdom of seeking wise counsel. In fact, that is the title of my sermon, The Wisdom of Seeking Wise Counsel. So the next 40, 45 minutes or so, we'll define what wise counsel is. Who should we seek to get wise counsel? Who should we not receive counsel from? And how does obedience to God contribute to wise counsel? And what are some of the barriers to getting the value from counsel, or why we don't sometimes do that? So those are the things we'll go over today in today's sermon. So first, as I just hinted at, let's define counsel. What is counsel? And the word used in Proverbs for counsel most often is the word atsa, which means advice. And it means by implication a plan, also prudence. Also in the Old Testament, especially when getting counsel from the Lord, there's a word called sode, and it means a session. That is a company of persons in close deliberation. Another word often used is ya'atz, and it means advice, reflecting, or to deliberate or resolve. And lastly, another word is shawal, to inquire, by implication to request. All these words are often translated to counsel in the Old Testament. From the English Online Dictionary, the word counsel means advice, opinion, or instruction given in directing the judgment or conduct of another, or interchange of opinions as to a future procedure, consultation, deliberation, deliberate, purpose, plan, design. These are some of the definitions of counsel. All these have a similar thoughts and ideas, all with the result of getting advice to move forward on a matter. It's all how to get advice, input, wisdom to move forward on something. So that's the definition. Let's move on to why is counsel important? Why is it important? We should probably first ask that question. I think all of us can kind of inherently know counsel is important. Let's turn to Proverbs to help answer that question. This question, why is it important to get counsel? If you'd like to start today, turn to Proverbs 12. Proverbs 12, and we'll get some insight why counsel is important. And thank you to the person who put water there. I will say your air conditioning works very well. As I see all the ladies most of the ladies all bundled up there. Proverbs 12, and we'll start in verse 15. It says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise." You know, the implication is clear. When we don't seek wise counsel or ignore wise counsel, it often results in looking foolish. And foolish people think they know it all. They think they're wise in their own eyes. They don't look for counsel. But he who heeds counsel is wise, is what Proverbs says. I don't know about you, but I do not like looking foolish. I'm not sure anyone in this room probably wants to look foolish. In fact, you probably go to great lengths not to look foolish. However, when we do what we want without input from a wise source, we can look foolish or end up looking foolish, or it's possible anyway. Every unwise decision I've made, and I made a few, in which I felt a bit foolish at the end, was a result of not seeking advice. You know, really everything was like, I just did it on my own. And that's because we get enamored with our own decision making. We think, oh, I know it all. We think we have all the right answers or the full perspective on a matter. And we go head first into a decision. From my own life, I'll share some of these with you. I don't mind sharing these with you. Some of these decisions I felt a little foolish about later on was car buying. Car buying. In my early 20s, I was buying a car without much knowledge or understanding. You know, several thousand dollars of car repairs helped me understand the importance of getting advice on car buying. You know, so I won't go into all the details, but I just went headfirst in buying a car. I didn't ask people. I certainly wasn't a mechanic. I wasn't a car expert myself, and sort of decided to buy a car without much input or advice or even getting it checked out before I bought it. It was a used car, and just went headfirst, and the end result was feeling a little silly. I felt good the first time I took the car off the lot and drove it. I felt pretty good, but as time went by and I started realizing we had problems, and with that resulted in having to spend money, I didn't feel so smart then. The last car, I'd be happy to tell you, we purchased. You know, I decided to buy a Consumer's Report. Spend $7 or $8 and researched every car. And I narrowed, and I looked at all the detail of all the right cars. And before I decided to buy a car, that's what I read, the Consumer's Report. But I had to learn from experience the negative results of just doing something on my own without getting counsel. And I could have asked people, got Consumer's Report, and that seemed to guide us to buying a car that has served us well with very minimal problems. I think it was the highest rated car for that year, and experts had rated it, and it's been a pretty good car since we've had it. Another area that I've had to learn the hard way, investments. You know, back in the 90s, it was quite laughable to think that I was able to pick stocks, but it seemed like everybody was doing it and making money. But hard-earned dollars lost later, I can now tell you, we now use a professional, well-regarded financial advisor. I had to learn the hard way that from experience, the negative results of just saying, I can pick a stock here and stock there. And the reality is, unless that's your training and that's what you do, it's very hard to pick stocks and make money at it. So it's better to use a financial advisor and use mutual funds and things like that. You know, so that's what we do now. We get somebody to help guide us. They look at our situation. They give us input. Much better outcome. Now, I do want to note for the record, for all those here, that my wife was not involved in any of those examples of poor decision-making and learning the hard way. She certainly would have advised getting counsel. In many of those cases, I acted on my own, even without her knowledge. So wise people will consult and listen to their spouse. It's not really a main point, but I just will kind of throw that out there in decision-making. In fact, a spouse can be very helpful in that. Luckily, I have not made any disastrous life-altering decisions that were not recoverable. Everything has been recoverable, and the worst case has been a few dollars out the pocket that you felt and feeling foolish at the results. But all that could have been avoided. All those things could have been avoided. But I had to learn these things the hard way. And I and you and all of us have decisions we need to make tomorrow, maybe even tonight, next week, or next year. And the question for me and for all of us is whether or not we'll have to learn from negative results again? Or can we seek wise counsel and avoid future pitfalls? Counsel is important because an unwise decision or foolish approach can have a very, very serious consequence that can set a course that's hard to reverse. Some have lost a lot more than dollars or a bad car or investments approach. There are larger things that can be lost than a few dollars and feeling foolish. Most of us want to make the wisest decisions we can. Now, if I asked everybody here, how many would, if I polled everyone, how many would raise their hand and say, I want to make an unwise decision? If you say, how many want to make an unwise decision? Nobody, I think, would raise their hand. Yet, we all have made unwise decisions. If none of us want to make an unwise decision, yet sometimes we do that anyway, what's the reason for that occurring? So that's a good question to ask. Why, if we don't want to make, no one here wants to make a bad decision, I'm sure. Why do sometimes we find ourselves making in a pattern of maybe bad decisions? It's a good question to ask. Well, let's look at what a barrier is or for seeking good counsel, or maybe a better way is to saying, what is the cause of not seeking wise counsel? Why is it that we may not seek wise counsel? From Scripture, and frankly from hard experience, there's probably one main reason why we don't seek wise counsel. Can you guess what it may be? Well, let's turn to our Scripture. It gives insight on why we sometimes don't seek wise counsel. I'd like to turn to Proverbs 16. Proverbs 16 and verse 18. It gives us some insight of why we don't sometimes seek wise counsel. It's not the only reason. I actually have another couple of reasons after this, but this is probably, you know, the core reason of why we don't seek counsel. In Proverbs 16, 18, it says in verse 18, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Solomon, the man given the abundance of wisdom, the most wisdom, says pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Now, what a fall or destruction likely occur if wise counsel is sought or taken? Not likely. Wise counsel keeps one from destruction, it says. There's pride that causes that destruction, the pride. When we ask for someone else's feedback, our mind can often view that as admitting that we don't know it all. And there's and we don't know something. We may not know something. That's pride that may be there. Now, this is not a problem for someone who's humble. But a prideful person has difficulty asking someone for advice. Often pride is a reason for not seeking counsel. A humble person will be happy to seek out those who are wise for counsel, and in doing so, most likely avoid a negative and bad consequence. You know, imagine a proud person striding down the path, you know, maybe the street, you know, you can think of the street, their nose slightly in the air because they're so confident they know the way forward. Several feet in front of them is a huge pit. There may be those even around yelling out, hey, look out, there's a big hole in front of you. You're about to fall into it. A proud person falls into the pit even though it could have been avoided. It reminds me of the scripture found in Proverbs 20, verse 20. I'll read that to you. It says, wisdom cries aloud in the street. You know, it's like this wisdom's all out in the street crying aloud. In the market, she raises her voice. And at the head of the noisy street, she cries out. At the entrance of the city gate, she speaks. So implies in Proverbs here that's all this wisdom crying out, yet it's pride that allows us to fall right into that hole. Pride is deceitful in that it allows us the false security that we know enough about something and we don't need to seek advice. Even though wisdom may be crying out, getting louder and louder, pride as well allows us to step in full stride into that pit. When we're young, we often can be confident in our strength and energy and abilities, thinking that normal laws of nature that apply to everyone else don't apply to us. Those with years you know, a few years, maybe older generation, can also get prideful through years of success, maybe, and be blinded to pitfalls that lurk around the corner. Some people with years of success make unwise decisions due to the belief that they are smarter than others and will always be smart enough to make good decisions. They have a track record of success, you might say. Yet, because of that, they miss signs and cues of reality and often make big mistakes. You see that a lot of times in the business world. Very, very smart people who guess have a track record of being successful and successful again, and they have this, and then all of a sudden they'll make this huge, massive mistake that brings down their whole career, or it causes a big pitfall for them to fall into. And often it's because you get delusional, you can make good decisions, and you don't need other help, and you just avoid getting counsel. And often you see that in the business world. At least I've noticed it anyway. And you see it in the newspaper, people that have been successful for 30 years, and all of a sudden they make a massive mistake. Young, old, successful, or struggling, no one is immune from pride. And when we do get prideful, we can be remiss in getting wise counsel and following through. We should all evaluate in our hearts and see if pride is a reason why we not seek wise counsel in our lives. So that's probably pride is the core reason, but I did have another add-on to why we sometimes don't seek wise counsel. And the answer simply is we don't want to hear the answer. We don't want to hear the answer. And I've seen that myself. Maybe you've noticed it in your own lives. You've seen others. The example I can think of oftentimes is, you know, how many people, hopefully this isn't a, you may know somebody, or it may even apply to somebody you know. So that oftentimes you're like, you see people in getting together for marriage, and you know, why don't you counsel for marriage? And they won't counsel, and everybody sees some concerns there. Oftentimes it's because they don't want to hear the answer. They kind of know if they actually go to somebody, maybe their parents or the minister, they're going to hear like, well, there's some problems here. Maybe you shouldn't go forward. So oftentimes, at least in my own life, maybe not around marriage, but other areas that I've been making decisions, I really don't want to hear the answer that I think I'm going to get if I counsel with somebody. They're going to say, well, I don't think you should do this. And in your mind, you really want to go forward with it. So you just don't get counsel because you don't really want to hear the answer that you secretly know in the back of your mind that someone's going to give you if you go ask. So you just go forward anyway, and sometimes with unfortunate results. So let's now look at where we should seek wise counsel. Where should we seek wise counsel? No. We'll look at some excellent sources before discussing how the ultimate counselor, God, can be the greatest source of wisdom. So ultimately we'll talk about God as the best counselor or the ultimate counselor. But let's talk about some other places that we can get counsel, some input, wise counsel. The first one I want to start with is parents. For younger folks, who do you get counsel or advice? Now, who do you get counsel or advice from? Well, let's look at the Bible for an answer to where we should get that. And I already gave you sort of the answer, I guess, parents. But let's turn to Proverbs 1 and see what Solomon said here. And Solomon, his father was David. And his mother was Bathsheba. And let's see what he says here. Proverbs 1 and verse 8. You can imagine that he probably got some good instruction from David. It would appear that his mother was helpful in bringing him up, very focused on bringing him up. Proverbs 1 verse 8 says, "Hear my son." Again, you know, he's talking in general terms. "My son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. And if you do that, it says, "For they are a graceful garland on your head and pendants on your neck, like nice jewelry, a nice crown made of jewels and very, very impressive set of decorative things that you can wear that people notice if you don't forsake your father's instructions or your mother's teaching." When we're young, it doesn't seem, you know, I remember the days when I was young, but it doesn't. When you're young, it just doesn't seem very cool to ask advice from parents. In fact, that's the last place you do want to ask a parent from, get advice from. And unfortunately, most of the TV shows today portray parents as out of touch, and teenagers are the kids in the show are usually the ones with all the insight and wisdom and have all the great approaches. And that's usually how it's portrayed. As I was growing up, I don't remember quite being that bad as it is today, but, you know, it was an old show, but they showed it as reruns. When I came home from school, we'd watch Leave It to Beaver, which was an old show even when I was growing up. But, you know, and we had Brady Bunch, and the Cosby Show came along later on. And even in those shows, the dad and the mom were generally showed in positive ways. But since then, lately, you know, we have those type of people being replaced by Homer Simpson, you know, on The Simpsons, and who isn't really portrayed as a very smart guy, kind of an oaf. And we even have, you know, worse examples. I actually was flicking through the channels one day and watched what seemed to be kind of a spinoff or a worst, another path down the worst of examples of was Family Guy, and I watched about 5 minutes before I couldn't really watch much more. And even like that, even there is even a bigger wolf than Homer Simpson. So that's kind of what's portrayed in TV shows, that you wouldn't never talk to your parents, and the kids are the ones that kind of know it all, and the parents are kind of stupid and out of it and don't make sense. However, parents should be a great source of wise counsel. As parents, they're the ones who care the most for the children and want them to avoid mistakes. Of all the people that want you to avoid mistakes, it's the parents. Parents never want to see their children make any kind of mistake where they're hurt. And that's, you know, so if anybody's going to give you good advice of avoid a problem, it'd be the parents. In many cultures, parents are consulted in every decision that is made. I was watching a show on how those in India, you know, if you're familiar with India, make a car buying decision. And it's very interesting that, and I actually know people from India. I actually went to India and was talking about this, and it was sort of aligned to what I saw on the show, that when you buy a car, when someone decides to buy a car in India, a young family, maybe a young family, all the parents come, the uncles come, the brothers come, they all go to the car dealer, and it's this big, long process, and they all go to make a decision, they all kind of give input of what is going to be bought for the family. It's kind of a family decision-making time, and it isn't just an individual. Everyone is consulted. Now, in Western cultures, like the U.S., the focus is more on the individual. The individuals make a decision, and you don't bring everybody into it. You know, there's certainly pluses and minuses on both approaches. However, it is instructive how cultures that work more as a group, which the Indian culture kind of does, and they seek input, can avoid certain pitfalls. You know, they kind of work as a group and they make decisions as a group. They can avoid certain pitfalls. You know, there are plus and minuses of both ways, but just interesting to observe that approach. Also in India, as an example, parents are very involved in choosing a mate for their children. Now, I worked with a lady who was from India. She came from India and she's over here working in the U.S. She talked about the process of how she got married. And she was actually very positive about the approach, because in their culture, usually the parents sort of help guide, I guess, their children to who they're going to marry. I think it's possible to get out of that decision if the child doesn't really doesn't want to do it. But they're kind of put together and say, we think based on knowing two of you and maybe there's other things that put into it, that they are then put together and they are married. Well, she was very positive. You know, I think it was very surprising to everybody around her. Was like, that's awful. Why? That's not the way I would want to do it. But she was very positive about the approach and cited a low divorce rate in India as a plus to this approach. And it's interesting to note that some of the people that were kind of against that approach have now learned have been divorced. So, you know, she seems to, there's a point there, I think, in getting input from your parents. Now, this approach, you know, may not be the way in our Anglo-Western culture, but we certainly can take some of the positives and learn from it. It doesn't mean that's the way we would necessarily do it here, but we certainly can observe and take some the positives and learn from them how they do that. Now, when considering marriage, a great source of input for young people would be your own parents. Again, your parents know you better than anyone else. You may not think so, but they do. Usually you've got some of their traits, or some of you, their traits are in you, and so they certainly can recognize that and know how your personality is and how you react to things. And they're likely to know what a good match is and what could be a challenge, most likely. You know, so that's one source. Seeking advice in other matters from parents is also wise. I've kind of focused on marriage, but that wasn't the only one. Maybe it's an educational path. I happen to know another Indian. I'm not saying this is the way to do it. I'm not saying that necessarily, but I happen to know another gentleman that I worked with who, his older brother and his dad sat him down one day and said, "Decide what you're doing, engineering." And that's where he went. He did engineering. It's almost like he had no choice. He could have, I guess, rebelled, but that's what they decided he was going to be, an engineer. So I'm not necessarily saying that's exactly the way we would want to approach it, but getting education, you know, help on education. You know, what do you think I should focus on? A career path. You know, your parents should know your strengths and weaknesses and maybe what you like to do, and they can say, you know what, maybe something over here should be good. All the parents I know only want positive outcomes for their children and can help counsel the right path in many areas. You know, Irma Bombeck once said, "When your mother asks, 'Do you want a piece of advice?' it is a mere formality. It doesn't matter if you answer yes or no, you're going to get it anyway." So maybe instead of resisting it, maybe as I did as a teenager, you should just like, okay, you know, let's listen to what she's going to say. Now, if we're lucky enough to have parents living and alive, we will seek, we'll be wise if we seek our parents' advice and listen. It's never too old, you know. In some cases, you know, that's not possible anymore. But if you know, we're young and our parents are alive, and that's usually a good source for getting wisdom. Another source, let's move on to another source that we can get counsel from, is from friends. From friends. With one caveat, they also should be wise. They should also be wise. You can have some really unwise friends, and maybe you don't want, and I wouldn't suggest getting help from them. But if you have friends that are wise and can help you, they can obviously help you in some areas as well. Proverbs 13:20 says, "Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." Again, that's in Proverbs 13, verse 20. And this may be one of the most important scriptures we can follow when it comes to being wise for all of us, especially when we're young. You know, because it kind of implies if you're around fools, you will suffer harm. But whoever walks with the wise, it means if you have wise friends and they're wise, you know, you'll become wise as well. One of the best things I can recommend, you know, if you're school age or in college, you know, seek good friends, wise friends. You know, don't look to necessarily be with those that are, you know, cool or in the in crowd or popular. But who are the ones who are diligent in study and have good goals, you know? By being with those who are wise, it will put you in a position to be exposed to more wisdom and more knowledge. You know, contrast hanging out with those who are more interested in having fun. Now, having fun is good. Nothing's wrong with having fun. But there's people who want to have fun and break the rules and not be diligent. You know, the results will be that you're dragged down the same path, and sometimes you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Talking about the murders in Chicago, there was a person who was part of a group of young men who just was part of this game where they decided to just pick people and beat them up for no reason. That was sort of a game. And then in this case, they actually killed the man, who's a 68-year-old man. And so they're now on trial for murder. And on the news, I heard a little blurb, they interviewed the uncle, and he says he wanted to be an FBI agent. One of the young men wanted to be an FBI agent and go to school and had a career. But he was hanging out with these other youths who decided to play this game that they thought made sense at the time, which was randomly pick somebody and beat them up. And in this case, they actually killed somebody, which may not have been their intent, but that's what happened. So now they're going to go to jail. And this gentleman will, I think, who had good grades and everything, is going to go to jail instead of being an FBI agent. Very different path. in that case, very, very serious consequence despite being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I was traveling for a while for my job, and I actually was sitting next to somebody who had a sports magazine, and he let me read it, and I actually was very impressed by one of the football players. I think he was drafted second this year in the football draft out of college, Robert Griffin III. You may have heard of him. I think he went to Baylor as a quarterback, but I was reading about him. I was like, oh, I'll just read this article about him, and I was very, very impressed because he was a young man who now is a multimillionaire that he just signed, but he was very talented in his athletics. But it made the point that he was very, very disciplined, and he did not choose to have friends that were going to take him down the wrong path. And in fact, they said he made a very conscious decision that after the high school football games, where there was always this party afterwards, he made the decision to, like, I'm going to go home and, you know, take not be in the party, and he would do the things to help his body repair from playing a football game, and he would study. And I think he ended up being close to a 4.0 graduate, and he didn't get stuck in the wrong place. And he knew that if he was in that party afterwards, that he was most likely to drink and have alcohol and probably have drugs, and who knows what would happen after that. Because he had a goal to be an NFL quarterback, and he knew going down to these parties could compromise that path. So it is important who your friends are. Walking with the wise is a lifelong benefit to having insights and access to knowledge and wisdom. And when you have people that are wise, I mean, I usually try to, if I can, hang out with people that are wiser than me, because you'll glean little insights. And you'll become wiser than you are yourself. I want to read about an illustration of a man who did that. He kind of realized this on his own, or he realized he came across this approach in his own way, in his own job. And it's about a person. Now I think this is done more common. This is more common, but when he did it, it wasn't very common. His name is Robert Eggert, and he has died since in 2007. But there's an article I want to kind of share with you. And he was an economist, and he was well known for being able to predict the economy and where things were going, and therefore people can kind of predict, you know, what was going to happen and make good decisions. And he came across, and he applied this principle: if you walk with wise people, you'll become wise. So I'd like to read this illustration to you, what he did to help illustrate walking with wise can really help you. Even though he was a very smart man, he was educated, as we'll see, but he actually went beyond that and was able to benefit from that. The economist, Robert Eggert, began a monthly newsletter called The Blue Chip Indicator in 1976, and it's now read by the American president, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, and CEOs of the biggest companies in America. The newsletter attempts to predict the future. The Blue Chip Economic Indicators gives forecasts on economic matters like gross domestic product growth, unemployment rates. Now, how do Robert Eggert and the Blue Chip predict the future with an accuracy that motivates subscribers to pay subscriptions up to $500 a year to get this report? Eggert's secret is a simple idea he got in 1969. He gives a consensus forecast, which means he gets a lot of different people's input and gets the outcome. Writer Mark Memmott describes the process of what he does. On the 15th of each month, he sends a memo to 75 economists on his list. They include forecasters at such household names as Ford, Chrysler, GM, Sears, J.P. Morgan, from academic circles, from UCLA, Georgia State, and also consultants. He alerts them to special questions he'll be asking. Then on the first working day of each month, his questionnaires are returned by all 75. By the fifth working day of the month, Eggert has crunched the responses, written his analysis, and sent the copy to the publisher. Eggert first experimented with the idea of making a consensus forecast in the early 70s when he was chief economist at RCA. When he started to average out the other economists' forecasts, it became apparent that the consensus usually had an almost uncanny ability to predict what was coming. Just getting wise counsel from those wise in economics who are wise, helped Robert Egert have an accurate forecast. So this applies equally to all of us, no matter what the age. We walk among those who are wise. We seek out those who are wise. We have access to a variety of insights to help us make good decisions. Let's look at an example of someone who did not walk with the wise. Let's turn to 1 Kings 12. We'll see someone who did the opposite of this. And we'll see what the outcome is. This kind of shows you what can happen if you choose to not walk with wise people. In fact, walk with people who are unwise. 1 Kings 12, and we'll read verse 1 through 14. And this is an example of Rehoboam. Remember, right, Rehoboam was the king after Solomon died. And he decides to make certain decisions that end up causing problems for the nation of Israel. In fact, splitting the nation of Israel, where there's northern kingdom and Judah. 1 Kings 12, verse 1. It says, Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. So he was going to be the king after Solomon. And as soon as Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard of it, for he was still in Egypt, where he had fled from King Solomon, then Jeroboam returned from Egypt, and they sent and called him. And Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and said to Rehoboam, your father made our yoke heavy. Now, therefore, lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke on us, and we will serve you. And so Rehoboam said to them, go away for 3 days and then come back to me. So the people went away. Then King Rehoboam took counsel from the old man who had stood before Solomon, you know, his father, while he was yet alive, saying, how do you advise me to answer these people? And they said to him, if you will be a servant to these people today and serve them and speak good words to them, then you answer them, then they will be your servants forever. Verse 8, but he abandoned the counsel that the old men gave him and took counsel with the young men who had grown up with him and stood before him. And he said to them, what do you advise that we answer these people who have said to me, lighten the yoke that your father put on us? And the young men who had grown up with him said to him, thus shall you speak to the people who said to you, your father made our yoke heavy, but you lighten it for us. Thus shall you say to them, my little finger is thicker than my father's thighs. And now, whereas my father laid on you a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. And that was what the young friends of his said. Verse 12, so Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, as the king said, come to me again the third day. And the king answered the people harshly, and forsaking the counsel that the old men had given him, he spoke to them according to the counsel of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplines you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. So we can kind of guess what the outcome is. You can imagine how you would react if you were told that. Here we see the results of a young king who did not choose to walk with the wise elders, but chose his inexperience and, I would say, unwise friends. The results were that the tribes, other than Judah and Benjamin, for the most part, and possibly you could put the Levites in there, they all rejected Rehoboam and chose a new king, who happened to be Jeroboam. They said, okay, we're going to have our own king. Forget you, Rehoboam. We're going to do our own thing. And from that point on, there was two nations of Israel, the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom. Walking with the wise can make a huge difference in our perspective and decision making. So it is good to have wise friends. You can get counsel from them. And if you do get counsel from friends, again, make sure that they're wise. Don't get counsel from the friend who's not always agree with you. Okay, yeah, you should do that. That makes sense. Yeah, if you want to go out after midnight and go do that, sounds good. You know, there's always friends that will agree with you. But you can get counsel from friends that are wise, and that's the point. You can get counsel from friends that are wise and will help you make good decisions. And the point really is walk with wise people as friends. So who else can we get counsel from? Well, we can get counsel from experts in the field. Experts in the field. Wise counsel can also come from those who are experts in a certain area. This may be common sense, but let's explore this for a few minutes. Seeking out someone who is an expert or has lots of understanding in a specific area to get wise counsel can be very helpful in making the best decision. When buying a house, searching out those who understand the real estate market can help make a good long-term decision. We actually had some friends who moved to Bloomington, Illinois, and they had been to our house before, and we are not experts in real estate, but we did have something. There was something that was about our that was unique about our house, that why they called us, and it was that they were looking at a house that had a pond kind of behind their house, and they have a young child, and they wanted to know the pluses and minuses of living in a house that had a pond behind them. And I was very impressed that they would call us and, you know, just seek out, you know, what do you think about this? Do you think it's a good idea or bad idea? What plus or minus on things? And then that helped them form a decision on what to do. You know, maybe there's things looking at a house. There's things about looking at a school. What are good schools in the area? You know, that may be helpful in looking at a house. You know, is the real estate appreciating or depreciating? Are there any, maybe somebody might know that something you wouldn't know about the government? You know, maybe some decisions being made, legislation that would really, really impact your area, you know, such as an approval of a state prison 2 miles away. Maybe you would like to know that. Or maybe it's a future toll rate going about a mile from your house. That might be a good thing or bad thing, depending on how it may impact the price of your house. You know, what other aspects are occurring that would affect the property and long-term satisfaction of living in that area? You know, other people can give you input on that you wouldn't see yourself. You know, and a real estate agent can help with that, and there's other sources as well. But this can be applied to every area in our life. You know, when we're seeking out a medical issue, you know, it's good to get experts in that area, and maybe multiple experts. Or if you need financial advice, getting some good financial advice from multiple people that have expertise in that area. And this can also come from books. It doesn't always have to come from a person. I always think of my father-in-law who gets many, many books on an area that maybe he doesn't know a lot about before making a decision. And he was telling me about one last night that he's getting a book on a specific area and he's reading it and he's giving a lot of insight, getting a lot of input on a specific area that he's looking into right now. Maybe it's getting input on education. You know, what are the best schools? Maybe you're looking for higher education. What about school A versus school B? And maybe one's better than the other for different reasons. So seeking out a qualified expert, and if it sometimes requires a fee to get the advice, it may be well worth it. Again, I can think of, in fact, actually, Mr. Rollinsmuse and Mr. Fay are great examples. I see both of them seeking out advice. Mr. Rollinsmuse is not here today, so I'll use him as a good example. You know, I'm always impressed by the fact that he will go around and talk to so many people about something before he makes a decision. Like, you know, what do you think about this? And he'll find people and get a lot of input. And Mr. Fay, who was a pastor here for a while, and he will always go out and seek out advice, maybe a lawyer or a doctor or some attorney that has specific experts in a tax area or something that can help him, you know, with something he's trying to figure out. All these things help get good advice and feeling foolish later on. Seeking an expert in an area can be very instructive. You know, and it's always helpful. I mean, I can see the difference in even our own son. I try to teach him certain things, and then he'll go take a class in swimming, and the instructor is expert in swimming. And, you know, within one class period, he's able to swim and do things because the instructor is expert in teaching young children how to swim. So you want to seek out experts because it can be very helpful in helping you make a decision or moving forward or learning something, whatever it may be. But seeking experts can be very helpful to learn a skill or to get advice or counsel. When it comes to spiritual matters, seeking out wise men in the church. you know, somebody who's a lot of experience. Maybe that you can just tell they're wise. Oftentimes, this can be the pastor, can help you out with some insights to spiritual decision making. Maybe you have an area that you're working on or thinking about, and if it's that's a great place to start. Again, I keep using marriage. Going to a minister for input on marriage is a great thing to do before going forward with it. They can help you out. They usually have a lot of good tools and a wealth of experience to help navigate, helping you towards choosing a good decision or choosing a mate and making a decision. Now let's go to the next point of getting good counsel. We've talked about getting wise counsel from parents, friends, and experts to help avoid pitfalls of life. But even if we have the wisest parents, I like to think I have wise parents, hopefully you do too. You maybe have wise friends, and you utilize the wise and knowledgeable experts that you may have contact with to get the fact. You may not still have all the facts. Even if you contact your parents, you say, what should I do? And they give you advice. You talk to maybe an expert in that area. You may still not have all the facts. In fact, it may be impossible for them to have all the facts or knowledge or insight to know how to move forward. There's a source of all knowledge that can provide us insight on things and help us avoid a pit if we ask them. We can most importantly ask God for wise counsel on a matter. To illustrate this, let's look at an example where the Israelites did not seek God on a matter, and it resulted in making a poor judgment, an error in judgment, actually. Joshua 9, if you'd like to turn there, back to Joshua 9. We'll see one of the heroes of the Old Testament, somebody who's almost always used as a positive example, someone who always seemed to do the right thing. Even he had a very, very minor slip-up in this area, and we'll look at this in a moment. In Joshua 9, and we'll start in verse 1. As an example, Joshua 9 and verse 1. It says, as soon as all the kings, again, this is Joshua 9, verse 1, as soon as all the kings who were beyond the Jordan, and we're talking about the Israelites here, they were crossing over into the promised land. Joshua, as we know, was now the leader of the Israelites. As soon as all the kings who were beyond the Jordan in the hill country and the lowland, all along the coast of the great sea towards Lebanon, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites heard of this. Again, they are hearing about the great victories that Israel was having. They gathered together as one to fight against Joshua and Israel. Verse 3, but when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, they on their part acted with cunning and went and made ready provisions and took worn-out sacks. I wonder why they would do that. For their donkeys and wineskins and worn out and torn and mended and worn out patches, sandals on their feet and worn out clothing. And all the provisions were dry and crumbly. They went to Joshua in the camp of Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, we have come from a distant country, long, far, far, far away. So now make a covenant with us. But the men of Israel said to the Hivites, perhaps you live among us. Then how can we make a covenant with you? As you remember, right, Israel, God told Israel not to make any covenants with the people in the promised land, just to wipe them out, get rid of them. So they knew that was instruction. So they were like, well, maybe you live among us. Maybe we can't even make a covenant with you. But then they said to Joshua, we are your servants. And Joshua said to them, who are you and where do you come from? And they said to him, from a very, very distant country, your servants have come because of the name of the Lord, your God. For we have heard a report of him and all that he did in Egypt and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon, the kings of Heshbon, and to Og, king of Bashan, who lived in Ashtaroth. So in verse 11, so our elders and all the inhabitants of our country said to us, take provisions in your hand for the journey and go, because it's a very long journey, and go and meet them and say to them, we are your servants. Come now, make a covenant with us. Here is our bread. It was still warm when we took it from our houses as our food for the journey on the day we set out to come to you. But now, behold, it is dry and crumbly. These wineskins were new when we filled them, and behold, they have burst. And these garments and sandals of ours are worn out for the very long journey. Verse 14, this is the part I want to focus on. So the men took some of the provisions, but did not ask counsel from the Lord. And Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live. And the leaders of the congregation swore to them. I think you see that this is a very instructive lesson for us. When reading this, I wonder how many times, you know, I've neglected to ask God for his counsel and just relied on my own intuition or the facts that as they were presented to me. Hey, these are some good facts. I think I can make a good decision here. I've got it all figured out. If I get the right facts, I can make a good decision. In this case, God knew the truth about the Gibeonites. From all appearance, the decision that Joshua made to make peace seemed correct, or certainly okay. However, if Joshua had inquired of God, God would have shown him the correct path and the truth about the Gibeonites. Just like Joshua, we can sometimes think we have all the facts and all the knowledge and make a decision on how to move forward. Maybe Joshua thought that this was too small of an issue for God to take up with God. Maybe Joshua thought it was obvious what to do, and he wanted to save the hard decisions for God. Maybe we think that sometimes. You know, I was wondering how many decisions in our own life that we make that we don't include God. Is it possible that we can include God in more decisions in our life than we do? Like no one else, God can see down the road into the future and see what's best, including all the other wise sources, you know, friends, experts, and family. Only God can see what the best path is. When we trust God in all areas of our life, even small ones, we can have good results. Let's turn to Proverbs 3 and verse 5. We'll see this emphasized here. Proverbs 3 and verse 5. And in verse 5 here, Solomon says, chapter 3, says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean to your own understanding." You know, we think about Joshua. Joshua was leaning towards his own understanding of the facts and what was in front of him. And I certainly can think of the times when I've done that myself. Hey, you have understanding. But it says here, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean to your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord, and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh, and refreshment to your bones." So very good advice there, something we have to remind ourselves of daily. Let's look at David as someone who followed this example. He was a person after God's own heart. And in most cases, he trusted the Lord with all his heart. There were some exceptions. But in many cases, he did trust the Lord and not his own understanding. Let's turn to 1 Samuel 23 as an example of this. 1 Samuel 23 and verse 1, we'll see David here, who didn't lean to his own understanding, but he looked to God to guide him. 1 Samuel 23, and we'll start in verse 1 here. He says, "Then they told David, saying, 'Look, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah, and they are robbing the threshing floors.' Therefore David inquired of the Lord, saying, 'Shall I go and attack these Philistines?'" So first thing he did was go and ask the Lord, "Shall I go and attack these Philistines?" Seems like a good thing to ask. And the Lord said to David, "Go and attack the Philistines and save Keilah." But David's men said to him, "Look, we are afraid here in Judah." So they're in Judah in somewhat safe area, and they're still afraid. "How much more if we go to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines?" Then David inquired again of the Lord, And the Lord answered and said, "Arise, go down to Keilah, for I will deliver the Philistines into your hand, And David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines, struck them with a mighty blow, and took away their livestock. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. So what do we see David doing here? First, he inquired of God, you know, should I attack the Philistines or not? And the answer was yes. Then David went to his men, and you might say he was counseling with them. And the men are like, are you sure we really want to do that? The thoughts were, you know, like, David, are you sure we really want to go attack the Philistines? And they look a little more fierce than us. I know we're not really wimps ourselves, but, you know, we're not really sure this is a good idea. And it actually looks kind of dangerous to go attack the Philistines in Keilah. So David thought about it, I guess. It looks like he thought about it, and he said, well, it may not hurt to ask one more time. And David inquired of God again. He said, I will, and then God said, I will deliver the Philistines to you. So David did what? He went off with confidence, just like he had when he slew Goliath, the bear, and the lion. And he inquired of God, and he got the answer what to do. Let's look at another example of David in 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles 14, verse 8. I'd like to turn over there with me, and we'll see a similar example of how he inquired. 1 Chronicles 14, 8. Now, when the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over all Israel, all the Philistines went up to search for David, and David heard of it and went out against them. Then the Philistines went and made a raid on the valley of Rephaim. And David inquired of God. Here he goes. David inquired of God, saying, shall I go up against the Philistines? Will you deliver them into my hand? And the Lord said to him, go up, for I will deliver them into your hand. So they went up to Baal Perazim, and David defeated them there. And David said, God has broken through my enemies by my hand like a breakthrough of water. Therefore they called the name of that place Baal Perazim. And when they left their gods there, David gave a commandment, and they burned them with fire. Then the Philistines once again made a raid on the valley. The Philistines never seem to want to give up. He finds they're always coming back and attacking. Therefore, in verse 14, David inquired again of God. You know, at this point, you might think, well, I'm kind of confident of my own abilities. I'm not going to just go and do what I think is right. But he didn't do that. Therefore, David did what? Inquired again of God. And God said to him, you shall not go up after them. Circle around them and come up upon them in front of the mulberry trees. Verse 15, and it shall be when you hear a sound of marching in the tops of the mulberry trees, then you shall go out to battle. For God has gone out before you to strike the camp of the Philistines. So David did as God commanded him, and they drove back the army of the Philistines from Gibeon as far as Gezer. Then the fame of David went out into all the lands, and the Lord brought the fear of him upon all the nations. Here we see David inquiring of God the correct path. We see God then blessing David and actually intervening on behalf of David. You know, he went out the first time, and then God and blessed him, and then there was another issue, and David inquired again, and God gave him some slightly different instructions, and it looks like God did most of the fighting in this case and fought for him, and that's because David inquired what to do. Now, that was a good example of inquiring of God. Let's look at an example of a bad example. Let's turn to 1 Samuel 13. We see the example of Saul, who was rejected by God as a king. And we see why in 1 Samuel 13. 1 Samuel 13, and we'll start in verse 5. 1 Samuel 13 and verse 5. It says here, and the Philistines, again, the Philistines were this constant annoyance to the Israelites. And the Philistines mustered to fight with Israel 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen and troops like the sand on the seashore in multitude. They came up and encamped in Michmash to the east of Bethaven. When the men of Israel saw that they were in trouble, for the people were hard pressed, the people hid themselves in caves and in holes and in rocks and in tombs and in cisterns. And some Hebrews crossed the fords of the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. And it says, Saul was still at Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. So they were kind of scared. And a lot of people ran away and hid themselves. Verse 8, and he waited 7 days, the time appointed by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. So Saul said, bring the burnt offering here to me, and the peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. As soon as he had finished offering the burnt offerings, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him and greet him. And Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, when I saw the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and the Philistines had mustered at Michmash, I said, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the favor of the Lord. So he didn't really ask God what to do. He just was sort of trying to get favor on his own. So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God with which he commanded you. For then the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. So what do we see Saul doing here? He's in a similar situation as David, you know, with the Philistines ready to attack, maybe being a stronger force. The people are scared. Does he inquire of God what to do like David? No, he makes his own decisions what to do. He leans to his own understanding and does not involve God in his input. Now, this is really the difference between Saul and David. David inquired of God, and Saul did not. Samuel summed it up correctly. Saul would seek after his own heart and not obey God. Now, all of us would like to have God be a source of counsel, like God was with David. One in which we could ask and inquire of God what to do and get an answer. Well, today, we have the written word of God right here in front of us. We have Bibles, we have our iPads, laptops. Everything, God's word is accessible to us at all times. We read his word and counsel with God to learn his opinions and recommendations of how we should proceed. Now, God will give us answers, but we have to be listening to God and obeying God. I think obeying him is very important. God is and can be our greatest source of wisdom and counsel, but we have to be following him. Let's see what God has to say about those who inquire of him, yet they're not obeying God. It's an important point here that we have to be obeying God. You know, if we're obeying God and we ask God what we should do, what path we should take, you know, we will get the answers from the Bible, and he will give us the direction to go. But let's look at Ezekiel 14. To show that obeying God is important when we seek his counsel. And we just can't kind of ask him if we're not following him fully. Ezekiel 14, verse 1. Ezekiel 14, and verse 1, it says, then certain of the elders of Israel came to me, and this is Ezekiel talking, the prophet, and sat before me. And the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, these men have taken their idols into their hearts and set the stumbling block of their iniquity before their faces. Should I indeed let myself be consulted by them? ? It's kind of like, you know, this is something we should really consider. You know, here's these elders, the leaders of Israel, doing their own thing. They've got idols. They're obviously not following God. They've got iniquity, I mean sin. They're certainly not going the right path. And then all of a sudden they want to be consulted. They want to consult God. And God's like, why should I give them any answer? What's the point? You know, they're not following them, not following him. They're not obeying God. You know, this is something that we should all consider. We can't have a huge problem in our lives, a big idol, you might say, in front of us that we won't address. And then expect to go to God for answers. And we can't be sinning and say, okay, God, give me the answer. It's kind of, we have to be following God. You know, young people You know, God will guide your paths. You know, older folks, God will give you the right path to follow and answers. You know, it's a very dangerous world we live in. We've heard about in that in announcements. And we have the equivalent of the Philistines always ready to attack. It seems like we always have these Philistines in our own lives who are constantly there attacking us and, you know, trying to harm us in some way. And God will guide our paths in those situations. He will protect us. He will give us the answers how to deal with those situations. But we can't have one foot in the world and the other foot sort of in the church, as you might say, at the same time. It has to be one or the other. We have to be fully in God's way, following Him. If we follow God to the best of our ability, addressing things that He brings to our attention, we can be confident in the promise found in James 1:5. And it says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. Receiving wise counsel from the right sources is a prudent approach to avoid many of the pitfalls of life. For young folks getting going in life, you're blessed with youth, energy, and strength. Now, it is possible to have both wisdom and youth, if you choose. Seek wise counsel in all areas of life. I really encourage you, if you're young, especially if you're young, although it can be everybody, really take this time to seek out wise counsel. For those of us who have youth in the rear of your mirror, let's continue to remember the wisdom of getting wise counsel, and most importantly, include God in our decision-making to seek His path for going forward. So, brothers, nice being here with you today, and I do want to encourage us, let's all seek wise counsel, and most importantly, let's follow God and get counsel from Him.